Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Salt Lake Tribune reports that in Utah, suicide is the leading cause of death for those between 10 and 24. And Utah is among the states with the highest rates of youth mental health disorders. We've had the highest prevalence of youth with untreated mental health needs. And teen girls are experiencing record high levels of sadness, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Tribune recently spoke with young leaders in Utah working to help, and today we'll revisit our conversation from May with one of those leaders. Sarah Brown is assistant to the executive director and equine assisted learning director, instructor rather, at Bridle Up Hope. Bridle Up Hope's equine assisted learning curriculum teaches girls and women to recognize their inherent worth and potential. They combine equestrian training, life skills development, and service in the barn with self-renewal activities. Well, the program following the news.
This episode of Access Utah was originally broadcast in May.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that in Utah, suicide is the leading cause of death for those between 10 and 24. We're among the states with the highest rates of youth mental health disorders. We have the highest prevalence of youth with untreated mental health needs. And teen girls are experiencing record high levels of sadness, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Tribune recently spoke with some young leaders in Utah working to help. Today we'll talk with one of those young leaders. Sarah Brown is assistant to the executive director and equine assisted learning instructor at Bridle Up Hope. That's a program which uses equine assisted learning to teach girls and women to recognize their inherent worth and potential and to approach life with correct paradigms of themselves and others. So we bring in now Sarah Brown. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I am so excited to talk with you and just share you Bridle Up Hope's mission and how horses really can save lives.
Wonderful. So I understand you grew up with horses. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, honestly, I think my dad put me on a horse like the day I was born. Uh-huh. We have pictures of me when I was just a little girl riding alone, and I think I was always one of those little girls that aspired to be a cowgirl and ride in the rodeos, and I was super fortunate to have the opportunity growing up. I had great mentors in the rodeo world and ended up competing in high school rodeo, competed in local rodeos in southern Utah. I also competed in rodeo queening for a little bit. And honestly, all thanks to my dad for that. He was definitely a really big motivating factor for me. I remember when I was just a little girl, I ended up falling off my horse and I didn't want to get back on because I was so terrified. But my cute dad just encouraged me to get back on, and that in life we just can't give up. And honestly, because of that moment, I feel like horses have taught me so much. And I ended up going to college in Southern California, kind of taking a step back from horses, not thinking I'd, you know, come back to them, and ended up moving to Utah and finding Bridle Up Hope. And it was just such a beautiful moment to see my experiences growing up with horses, how I could be able to teach what I know about them and share it with young girls and women.
Before we get to Bridle Up Hope, I'm wondering, I haven't been around horses that much. I've, you know, maybe ridden once or twice. But it can be kind of scary. These are big animals.
Yeah, 1,200 to 1,600 pound animals. They're quite intimidating. And honestly, you talk to so many individuals and they're terrified of them. And, you know, I see a lot of my friends and people who've never even been around them who definitely are very intimidated by their big nature. And especially if you don't know how to handle them, it can be a little scary at first. I think that's what makes them so healing, though, is you have to step into that courage zone and really learn to trust the animal and to kind of see them for their personality and their strengths. So it's so beautiful to see somebody who maybe is a little bit more nervous to work with them, you know, build that confidence and to find that trust with them.
So you did rodeo. What events did you do?
Yeah, so I competed, oh my goodness, in so many different things. But my main event was barrel racing. Mm-hmm. And then in high school rodeo, I got involved in pole bending, breakaway roping. I also did goat tying. And then Rodeo Queen was definitely one of my favorite things that I was involved in.
What did, take me back to, well, your dad got you on the horse at a very young age, and then I'm sure, you know, trained you. And tell me a little bit about how you approached horses, how you learned to be with horses, I guess, first of all, and then ride horses. And did you bond with some specific horses?
Yeah. So growing up, my dad had an Arabian, and his name was Cody. And then when I was around 5 or 6 years old, I got my own horse, and her name was Sally. And my dad would always tell me that when I was younger, I'd be, like, behind the horse playing with their tails or, like, going underneath the horses. And he's like, Sarah, I don't know how you're not hurt by horses because of the things you were doing. But, you know, something that I can recall is, and this is definitely an example from my dad, just every day, you know, waking up sunshine or rain or snow and going and feeding the horses, and just how much they require hard work, right? And they require consistency. They require you to work with them daily, and they need their exercise. They need to be fed. And I can't say that I was perfect at taking care of my horses, but definitely I remember how hard it was to, you know, to put in that work and to practice. And but I would say when I was younger, I built a connection with them through that moment when I fell off, because it was a time in my life that I had decided to get back on and to find that confidence. And I was definitely not a confident rider growing up. I have a video of me riding a horse in Hawaii, and the horse was cantering along the beach, and I'm just bawling my eyes out because I was so terrified. But through time, I felt like I started to build a connection with the horses that we had through spending more time with them and through finding things that made them happy and things that could connect us. And I have this picture of myself who was one of my birthday parties. And I wanted to just share horses with all of my friends. And so my birthday party was centered around me basically showcasing my horse. And I just remembered how much I loved them. And I just wanted to tell everybody about horses because I just felt so happy being with them. And I think that gave me a lot of purpose because, you know, my parents, they struggled in their marriage and they ended up getting a divorce. And I truly believe that horses, they gave me purpose and they helped me find who I was as a young girl. It gave me something to work towards. And I think in rodeo cleaning, you know, you're not only being a mentor in the rodeo world, but when you get to all of these rodeos and you're being a representative, all these girls are looking up to you and they see a confident young woman who loves horses. And so through rodeo queening, I was able to learn a lot more about horses, learn about the saddle, learn about the individual rodeos that I was representing. And I've just had so many beautiful experiences with horses, you know, even working here at Briarlip Hope, where I've come to understand horses on a very different level than I did when I was a lot younger. And it's just been so cool to share that with other girls.
One more question before we get to Briarlip Hope. Definitely want to talk about that. Tell me about what competing did for you. I'm a real believer in that. I played high school tennis and then afterwards, involved in tournaments. A lot of lessons you can learn from sports or competition of any kind. I imagine rodeo world was no different for you.
Yeah, definitely. And I will be completely honest with you. I was not the best of the best, right? Like I wasn't taking home medals or cash every rodeo. But what I feel like rodeo taught me in competing, even in rodeo cleaning, is, you know, when you don't win, it's not a loss, right? You learn from it, and then you continue to grow and progress. And for me, I think in the competition world, you know, I didn't have the most expensive horse. We didn't have the nicest truck and trailer. So I would often compare myself to other girls. But my dad would just constantly remind me, like, you know, you are who you are, and love that. Like, love what you have and just love the sport. Like, be here and just be with your horse. Nothing else matters, right? Like, your placing doesn't matter. Like, do your best, but just have fun. And I think for me, like, it was every weekend we were going to different rodeos, me and my dad, and different competitions. And it just gave me so much life and just excitement to be there. And you know what? In the rodeo world, you usually warm up your horse for a good 20 to 30 minutes before you compete. And that's where you'd see all these amazing horses and women and cowboys. And it just gave me so many friendships. And I felt like truly at that time of my life, that's what I needed. I just needed to be pushed, and I needed to make friends. I needed to learn how to work hard, because obviously practice, like, that's how you grow to be a better rider. And I would often practice every day if I could out in our little arena and practice barrels and learn how to communicate with my horse a little bit better. I had great mentors who helped me, who I looked up to in the rodeo world. I remember rodeo queening, I had this gal who, she coached me for my first pageant, and she taught me so much. Honestly, she taught me everything I know to this day. And she lended me her clothes. She did so much for me. And I feel like young girls, especially me at that time, I needed a mentor. I needed somebody to look up to who was an example for me. And I think that also is the case in rodeo, just having a lot of people that I looked up to and people who helped me. There was this high school rodeo down in Salina, I believe, and my horse ended up falling and he couldn't compete that day. And I had this great individual who lended me their horse. And there was just so much support behind me. I always felt that in competing and rodeo queening. And I just feel like I learned so much from individuals around me that I'm super grateful for the opportunity that I had to compete.
You mentioned communicating with your horse. I'm curious about that. I guess the most simplistic level, you move the reins, right, et cetera. I'm sure there's much more than that to it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, horses, they're very intuitive with their rider. They can sense when you're off balance. They can sense when you're nervous. And you can also communicate with your body language, right? Like, horses can sense confidence. It's always funny, but before I would be competing, I'd always get so nervous. And my horse, like, he could feel that, and he would never go in the arena. It was the worst thing. So, you know, communicating with your horse, you really learn about their personality. You learn their weaknesses. So, for example, in barrel racing, you can either go to the left or the right. And you can go to either side depending on the strength of your horse, you know, whether you do two lefts and one right or two rights and one left, kind of based off of their strength. And so learning to communicate with your horse, just like people, right? You learn their strengths, their weaknesses. You learn what they're better at. Me and my horse, we were always just, I feel like we were just bonded. We were together. He was like my best friend, and we just understood each other. But that took a lot of time and practice to learn how to communicate in that way, where he could just sense what I wanted, and it was a great partnership.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the Bridle Up Hope story, which is a fascinating story as well. The work that you do there, very impressive. We're talking with Sarah Brown, who's assistant to the executive director and equine-assisted learning instructor at Bridle Up Hope. Which is a program that uses equine-assisted learning to teach girls and women to recognize their inherent worth and potential. We'll have more following this break.
This episode of Access Utah was originally broadcast in May.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Teen girls are experiencing record high levels of sadness, according to Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And Salt Lake Tribune reports that in Utah, suicide is the leading cause of death for those between 10 and 24. We're among the states with the highest rates of youth mental health disorders and have the highest prevalence of youth with untreated mental health needs. And we're talking with Sarah Brown, who's with Bridle Up Hope, which uses equine-assisted learning to teach girls and women to recognize their inherent worth and potential. According to Bridle Up Hope, on their website, what I'm reading here, they're designed to provide transformational experience for girls and women at a time when life has never been harder on them. They face relentless pressure to live up to impossible expectations, to have the perfect body, to be skinny, to be pretty, to be popular, get perfect grades, be athletic, and so forth, which often leads to low self-worth, anxiety, depression, and related challenges. That's where I want to start, Sarah Brown. I'm guessing you're probably not totally immune to any of these issues, or your friends or family, right? talk a little bit about that, how you've dealt with this.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm very familiar with a lot of those struggles. You know, we at Bridle Up Hope, we see girls as young as 12 years old struggling with self-confidence, not seeing their worth. And I can definitely relate to that. You know, life is not easy for anybody, girls and men. And for me, you know, with my parents separating when I was a little bit younger, I could truly say that I had no idea who I was. And I was experiencing a lot of struggles in my self-worth. I felt like I didn't really have any confidence. And I think girls and women, we mask, like, our if we don't have confidence with, like, makeup or clothes, like, we just try and do things that can make us feel better about ourselves. Or social media, right? Like, you try and take the prettiest pictures with the prettiest angles just to, like, feel confident in yourself and to have people, like, want to like you. You know, I experienced in middle school definitely a lot of struggles with friends. And I just remembered at points, like, feeling really sad that I just didn't feel good enough for some people. And I think this is normal for everyone, but for me and myself, like, being a very emotional creature, I definitely felt like I always was looking to just feel wanted or to feel seen or to feel liked. You know, and growing up, like, when you're in your teenage years, you're experiencing so many changes, and you know, we experience things that maybe the emotions we don't really necessarily know how to handle. And personally, like, I wish in high schools and middle schools we taught self-reliance. I wish we taught the 7 habits of highly effective people, because they have truly changed my life. And I love on the Salt Lake Tribune just kind of the title of, you know, finding my voice and helping others find theirs. Because I really do feel like Bridle Up Hope, not only being an instructor, but, you know, myself going through the program, I've been able to find my voice. And I've just been able to recognize, like, we don't need approval from other people. We don't even need to be liked by other people, because ultimately, like, we don't have control over them. And really, like, the way that we see ourselves is the most important thing. And I've come to just love who I am. I've come to see my greatest strengths. And I've come to recognize my weaknesses and want to work on them, and just really recognize what's within my influence to make myself happy and to not rely on other people's perspective about myself.
So Bridle Up Hope, you can find them at bridleuphope.org. So tell me about, you know, so a girl comes to Bridle Up Hope. What happens? Obviously, you're gonna get her on a horse, right? But that's tell me about how you work through mental health issues, boost self-esteem, and how the horses enter into that.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll just tell you a little bit about how we got started, because that is, like, the beautiful story behind us. So Sean and Rebecca Covey, they are our founders. And they have 8 beautiful children, and their oldest daughter, her name was Rachel. And Rachel loved horses. She had two horses of her own, and their names are Kokomo and Tarzan. And Rachel would take her friends horseback riding in the mountains. But Rachel had struggles with depression and anxiety, and as a result of that, she passed away when she was 21 back in 2012. And this family was devastated, right? They felt like they lost their whole world. And Sean and Rebecca, they said that, you know, they didn't feel like they could ever smile or be happy again after losing Rachel. And Stephen R. Covey is the grandfather of Rachel Covey, and he's the author of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he passed away 3 months prior to Rachel. And so, you know, within a span of 3 months, Sean and Rebecca lost both Stephen R. Covey and Rachel, and it was devastating. But at Rachel's funeral, they had some girls approach the parents of Sean and Rebecca, and they just said that Rachel saved my life. She would take me horseback riding at a time that I really needed it, and she taught me so much. And so the family felt inspired to start a neighborhood riding program and teach life skills through horses. And so they pulled from Stephen R. Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and they created this beautiful program called Bridle Up Hope, the Rachel Covey Foundation, where we teach the seven habits of highly effective people in conjunction with horseback riding for girls and women. And Rebecca Covey says it beautiful. She says, if you can save one girl, you can save a generation. So we have a girls program for 14 weeks here, and then a women's program for 7 weeks. And they come once a week, and we pair each girl and woman with a riding instructor. So that's kind of where my role comes in, is I'm a riding instructor for girls ages 12 to 22 I've taught. And they're paired with a mentor, and this can kind of take you back to my life, just how important having a mentor was for me. You know, especially at a time where you're navigating a difficult experience, not knowing how to get through it, you really look up to somebody and you take a lot of advice from other people. And so our riding instructors, we come from all different backgrounds of horses, whether that be rodeo, dressage, jumping. And we take our students either for that 14-week or that 7-week time, and we sit in a classroom with them, and we teach the seven habits of highly effective people. You know, we were trained for an extensive amount of time before becoming an instructor in the seven habits. And then for the last hour, we work with a different horse each week, and that's where we combine the seven habits with horses. So we like to call the horses 1,200-pound object lessons, where, you know, we're teaching the seven habits, but the horses are really giving them an opportunity to apply it to their life. I had this one moment with a girl, and we were riding a horse in our indoor arena, and the horse just kept turning around. And our goal, we were focusing on habit two, begin with the end in mind. Our goal was to get to the end of the arena. But her horse, for some reason, just kept turning around and going the opposite direction. And she was so frustrated. And she just started bawling. And she's like, Sarah, I can't do this. And it was just a beautiful moment to be like, you can do this. Like, keep your eyes looking forward and really look where you want to go. Right? Have that goal of what you want. And I want you to get there. Like, you totally can do this. And habit two, begin with the end in mind, we talk about, you know, who do I want to become? Where do I want to go? Who do I want to be known for? And so in that moment, she really had to dig deep of like, hey, how do I want to get there? How do I want to get to the end of the arena? I need to be in control. I need to use my voice. I need to find my confidence. And she did it. And it was so amazing. And it was something so simple. But for a 15-year-old girl to be able to work through that, she was able to apply that to her life, because there's going to be so many ups and downs in life. And truly just having that vision of where do you want to go and who do you want to be known for can help a young girl, even a woman. And so it's just so cool to see how the horses and habits apply so perfectly.
Yeah, imagine being able to successfully interact with a 1,000-pound animal, right? It's got to give you a sense of accomplishment. Tell me a little bit more about how the horses enter in here. How that's effective. A lot of different methods of therapy are effective, right? But horses seem to be well suited to this kind of learning, I guess, and growing confidence and that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. So horses, although they are very intimidating 1,200-pound animals, they're also gentle giants, right? And so when you approach a horse, you have to be confident because horses are naturally, by nature, reactive animals. And so we tell all of our students the importance of being confident when approaching a horse because they can sense that confidence. And if a girl is feeling anxious before riding, we typically will have them just take several deep breaths and just kind of touch the horse and ground themselves. That's one of my favorite things to do with an anxious student is to just ground themselves, to, you know, feel the dirt underneath their boots, touch the horse, be present, feel the wind on their face, and just take some deep breaths. I feel like horses are very therapeutic animals because of their gentle nature, but also because they do teach you to find that inner confidence. Something that I tell all my students is horses are a mirror, a reflection of yourself. So if you're feeling anxious, the horse will feel that, and then he'll feel anxious. Or if you're not confident, that horse will sense that, and he won't see you as a leader. And so horses, the reason why I feel like they're used in so many different therapeutic atmospheres, and with Bridle at Pulp not being clinical, right, we just teach the 7 habits. I feel like horses, they see you as you are, not who you were, not where you're going, not who you're going to be. They see you as you are, and they love you for that. And they work with you with where you are in your life. And I think just so much in girls and women, we try and be somebody we're not, or we try and impress everybody, right? We try and put on the makeup and the fancy clothes. But horses, you don't have to do that. You can just be yourself. And, you know, whether you're going through hardships in your life or you're just navigating life in general, like, they will love you for where you are. And you give your best and they'll give you their best.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Sarah Brown, who's with Bridle Up Hope. You can find them at bridleuphope.org, and they use equine-assisted learning to teach girls and women to recognize their inherent worth and potential. Could you tell me some girls who maybe stood out to you? Don't have to use names, but tell me a couple more stories of how this has affected some girls you've worked with.
Yeah, I would love that. You know, I was actually really curious how many girls I've taken through the program. And I think I'm at 250 girls right now that I've taken them through the program. And it's been such a beautiful experience. But one gal who has recently been on my mind, she is actually 21 years old. And she did the girls program, so it was for 14 weeks. And she said coming into the program that she really struggles on being like codependent. Like, she really relies on people and like what people think of her, like that's how she's going to live her life. And she's naturally a very anxious person. But, you know, going through the 7 habits and sitting in a classroom with her, we really talked about, you know, the independence, like, you know, habit 1, which is be proactive, take charge of your life, take charge of your horse, recognizing what is within your control. You know, I think she knew that she relied so much on what other people thought of her. And she was very anxiously attached to everybody around her. And so habit 1 was huge for her and this girl to really take control of her life and to not care what other people think about her. And she was very scared at first to get on a horse. But, you know, throughout the 14 weeks, she was cantering by the end of her program. And so just to kind of put it into perspective, all of our participants come from different backgrounds and different struggles and maybe have worked with horses or haven't. And so we build confidence through challenging these students, right? Teaching them how to walk, teaching them how to use their reins, how to use communication with their feet. Then we also teach them how to trot, right? That's kind of moving up. And then we teach them how to canter if they master their trot. And so the more that you're working with these horses, the more confident you become. And then you really recognize that I can do hard things. And so this girl, we constantly said that over and over again, like, I can do hard things. I can do hard things. And that was something that just got her through the program and something that, you know, she sent me a text and she just said at the end of her program that this saved her, that she has taken control of her life and she really has found that interdependence, right? Where she doesn't have to rely on people, but she knows that there are people there to help her, but that she really has herself to help get through these life struggles. I had a student when I first got here and to Bridal of Hope. She's one of my first students, and her mother had passed away right in front of her in a bike accident. And this girl was struggling, as you can imagine. And it was really, really difficult for me to be present because I just wanted to sit and cry. But in that moment, you know, something I recognized that she needed was just to be loved and to be in a safe place where, you know, she could process what she was going through. And the horses, I felt like, were so gentle with her. It was just a beautiful thing to see her kind of work through her grief and to just be at the barn where there's so many amazing women here who recognized her and knew her name. And, you know, I wouldn't say that Violet Pope saved her life in any way, but I feel like it gave her a place to be present with kind of what she was going through and to find peace and hope that things were going to get better and that this pain was only temporary. You know, I have so many stories. I wish I could tell them all because these girls have saved my life. But maybe to put this into perspective for you, this last year was a really difficult year for me. And, you know, there were moments where I was like giving up hope. But something I thought of was all of these students that I've been able to help. And I printed off pictures of all of my students and I put them on my wall because it was a reminder for me that I'm capable of doing hard things too, because these young girls who have navigated so many different life challenges and things that I would never wish upon someone, they got through it and they've found hope and resilience and confidence. And so it was just a really great reminder for me that I'm capable of doing hard things.
Yeah, the service you give comes back, doesn't it? Yeah. Speaking of which, so a Bridle Up Hope, you do equestrian training, right? You do life skills development, seven habits. And then there's a third component, service. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes. So habit seven of Stephen R. Covey's habits is sharpen the saw. So nurture your body, heart, mind, and soul. And the Coveys wanted to build and design this program in a way that they could give back to the barn and give back to the horses, right? Just kind of like what my story was, just barely like giving back to these girls, and they also give back in return. So we have service hours every day here throughout the week, Monday through Saturday, for our participants to come and give back. And so that includes mucking the stalls, feeding the horses, includes cleaning the facility, the indoor barn, helping around the property. And it is so amazing to see these participants come and build connections with other girls and women going through the program. And typically what we see is individuals who maybe wouldn't connect in life outside of Bridle of Hope are building some of the greatest connections here. We also have yoga class 3 times a week where the students can come and focus on grounding themselves, breathing, and just being present in the moment. We also do art class for our girls and women where, you know, they're focusing on that creative side of the brain. And there are clinical studies about how art can be very, really helpful for those struggling with anxiety and depression because it's a way of expression. I wish I was a better artist, but I definitely have seen that, just like that peaceful component of art. We also do self-defense classes here. So if you're familiar with Elizabeth Smart's story, she actually wrote in her book how horses helped her throughout her journey of grieving and kind of working through that traumatic experience. And she found a lot of peace through horses, but also self-defense through finding her voice. So we teach self-defense class, and all of our employees actually recently did a training with Smart Defense. And I can definitely say that I found my voice a lot in that moment, in that experience. And so it's so cool to be walking through the barn and all you hear is, hi-ya! And all these women just like finding their voice and moving their body. And then we also do line dancing class, which is super fun. And it gives the girls the opportunity to get outside of their comfort zone and to move their body and to learn something new. So throughout all of these, the component of the third pillar of our service program, the beautiful thing about it is that every time an individual comes to those activities, every 10 hours of service, art, yoga, they earn a free writing lesson. So Bridal of Hope, the program, it really does continue forward after they finish their program, and they can keep coming back and earning writing lessons.
So I just want to just have two or three minutes left here in the conversation. I made reference to Salt Lake Tribune. They did a couple of articles, and that's where we learned about Sarah Brown and Bridal of Hope. So they interviewed various young people in Utah helping with mental health issues in the state. And the Tribune interviewed you, right? So I love this question. I want to have you answer this for us. What advice do you have for other young adults who are looking to help improve their peers' mental health?
Yes, that is such a great question. Something that I really, really take to heart is the importance of sharpening your saw, habit 7. You know, I've seen in my life, if I'm not taking care of myself, if I'm not doing the things that bring me joy and taking care of my body, heart, mind, and soul, I really can't give back to others because I can't be fully present. And so my biggest advice for young leaders is to find something that they're passionate about and something that brings them joy and sharpens their saw so that they can have the ability to give back to others. Something that I have really seen in my life that has helped me is just having that abundance mentality, that growth mindset of if you're passionate about something, like spend all your time into it and you can find people to help. And something I've seen too is that our greatest struggles in our life give us the opportunity to help somebody next. And so to look at all of your struggles as an opportunity to learn and grow. And then also you're able to be vulnerable and share those experiences and those things that you learn with other people.
So just a minute or two left. I want to maybe have you, you know, plug away the Bridal of Hope, right? Give you a chance to plug away. So Bridal of Hope is in, I understand, at least 12 locations around the world, now several locations in Utah. I think you're wanting to expand, right?
Oh, yes. We are meeting with individuals all over the world right now to start a new Bridal of Hope location. And the biggest way that people can help is if you know somebody in your life, young girl or a woman who is struggling to find hope and confidence or recognize their self-worth, to have them come visit a Bridal of Hope location. And definitely check out our website. We are always open to new locations. We actually help in talk to all the individuals who are interested in opening it. And then at our headquarters here in Alpine, we do the training of the seven habits in conjunction with horses. So our goal is to have over 1,000 barns of Bridle of Hope around the world. And the pink horseshoe with the seven nail holes, that represents Bridle of Hope. We hope to see that all over the world one day. Britton Covey, he plays for the Eagles. He actually wore shoes, the cleats, and they had Bridle of Hope on them. And so our goal is to hopefully have the pink horseshoe everywhere in the world, and people will see that as a symbol of hope for girls and women and horses.
And if families are listening and worried about expense, you do scholarships, I think.
Yes, so we provide partial scholarships to an individual, and they have to apply for it. And we do it based off of family income and household size. And then we also do payment plans of 6, 12, 18 months, no interest. We don't want this program to, we don't want people to not do it because of expense. I've seen it change my life. I've seen it affect so many other individuals' lives. And we will make it work, even if money is a struggle right now.
All right. Go to bridleuphope.org, bridleuphope.org. I noticed there's a pink donate button there, so you could accept money, I'm sure, and help of various kinds. Sarah Brown has been with us. She is assistant to the executive director and the equine-assisted learning instructor at Bridle Up Hope. Sarah Brown, thanks for everything you're doing there. Thanks for the good work at Bridle Up Hope.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on today. It was such a pleasure and such a great experience. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Hey.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have a couple of our popular segments following this break.
Welcome to Utah Public Radio's Eating the Past and Other Tasty Morsels, a show that explores all things food.
Your hosts are Jeannie Sir, Jamie Sanders, Laura Gelfand, and Tammy Proctor, all from Utah State University.
Welcome to an episode of Eating the Past. I am host Jeannie Sir. We have recently been talking about the science of cooking, so today I would like to talk about a popular additive that was created in a lab. This additive is monosodium glutamate, also known as MSG. When I think of MSG, I automatically imagine something like Chinese food, but MSG is added in a wide variety of foods, most commonly in condiments such as ketchup, mustard, barbecue, mayo, salad dressing. It is also in a lot of canned soups and mixes. It's in spices and spice blends, and it is obviously in a lot of fast food. But MSG is also commonly found in processed meats and snacks in general, like chips. But surprisingly to me, MSG also occurs naturally. It is naturally found in tomatoes, certain cheeses like Parmesan, seafood like anchovies, oysters, clams, shrimps, basically the most delicious seafood. And not only tomatoes, but other vegetables like mushrooms, cabbage, potatoes, and carrots. It is also found in soy sauce and miso. Pretty much, MSG is found naturally in foods that can be described as having a profile of umami. I guess I should have known, MSG is used because it adds umami to foods. Also, I should say, umami is my favorite taste. If you didn't know, umami is considered one of the basic elements of taste. The common ones are sweet, bitter, sour, salty, and umami. Umami is also called savory. While there are usually five tastes, some people say there are seven. The other two are fat and spicy. I would definitely add spicy to my list, but I'm very unsure about fat. I'm not quite sure what taste fat occupies, but according to the journal Chemical Senses, the taste of fat isn't necessarily pleasant. But back to my favorite taste. Umami is the taste of savory. I like to think of it as adding depth to food. Somehow umami makes everything taste richer and deeper. But for me, we can't discuss MSG without discussing umami. MSG was first discovered or created by a Japanese professor of chemistry, Kakune Ikeda. It was discovered around 1907, 1908, but by 1909, he had patented MSG to produce it commercially. It's been told that he discovered MSG when one day he was eating soup and realized the soup was tastier due to the addition of kombu, a taste of seaweed. As an aside, to make a broth base, my family always cooks kelp with anchovies. It creates a great umami stock. But whether this story is true or not, this is the legend of how Professor Ikeda was inspired to create MSG. He's also said to have studied MSG and realized it occurred naturally in foods. His theory was that human tastes developed a taste for MSG because it signaled the presence of proteins. Although I'm not sure if his theory has been definitively proven, more recently, scientists at Tohoku University have discovered that the function of MSG naturally in foods might be that it makes food tasty. Which sounds intuitive and a bit too obvious, but in short, this enticement of tastiness serves a function. When someone might have an impaired sense of taste, to induce them to consume food. But to conclude, I can't leave this episode without addressing the controversy surrounding MSG. MSG has often been linked with Chinese food. Even though, as I've said in this episode, it does occur naturally and is found in a variety of foods, it has been linked to something that has been called Chinese restaurant syndrome, which is the presence of migraines after eating Chinese food, the culprit being MSG. The studies on this link is inconclusive and can be suspect. But it is an intriguing question and one I maybe hope to explore in another episode. But thank you for joining me today on another episode of Eating the Past. And please go to upr.org to listen to all of our past episodes.